Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Amy Volk. She's a Maine State Senator, Assistant Majority Leader for District 30 that covers Buxton, Gorham, and Scarborough, Maine. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. You know, there are a lot of things happening at the legislature.
Yes.
And so I can say this. As everybody would agree, some good, some bad, right? Mm-hmm. We'll just say that
that's always,
right? But it's interesting that there are a lot of things that are going to be or potentially going to be affecting the HR community.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're here to talk about today. So before we start, how's it been in the legislature? How's the mood? How's the atmosphere? What's going on?
Well, I think things are just beginning to heat up. And, you know, not just in terms of workload, but also in terms of we're starting to have those divided reports coming out of committee, and those typically lead to the debates on the floor in the House and the Senate. And so, you know, the most interesting part is yet to come, but we hope to be wrapped up right around mid-April for this short session, because anyone who's not termed out and is running again has to go out and campaign.
Yeah, and it's all about the campaign, isn't it?
Well, unfortunately, when you have 2-year terms, that's pretty much how it ends up being, yeah. And it's unfortunate. I've actually sponsored legislation to make at least the Senate terms, and that was even when I was in the House and had no idea I would ever run for Senate, to make our Senate terms longer, because people are shocked when they realize that our Senate terms are 2 years. So the only people consistently in Augusta from year to year are basically the lobbyists. And so, yeah. Yeah. You know.
And the administrations, right? You know, the people behind the
scenes. To a degree. They're 4-year terms and always subject to, you know, being turned over every four years.
Sure. No, absolutely. Well, okay. Well, at least we know that things are being moved forward.
Yeah.
As I like to say, the sausage making is happening, right?
Yes.
In terms of making that
happen. Exactly it.
That's exactly what it is. It's not pretty, but it does get done.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about a couple of things that I know are coming up.
Sure.
The first one would be paid family medical leave. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So that bill, which is LD 1587, had a hearing. It's a bill that I've actually sponsored, because I do feel like this is an idea that is coming. Several other states have passed that legislation, including Rhode Island and I believe Massachusetts. I could have that wrong.
Yeah.
California, obviously. But, you know,
New York.
Yeah. And so we're seeing that employers around Maine are beginning to offer this as a benefit, as a way to recruit and retain employees. And so my interest is really not in making it a mandate. It's really not in making it be something that businesses and people have to participate in. But I do see some value in having businesses be able to access it as a tool in the state of Maine, because one of the biggest challenges we know that employers face here is attracting good talent from out of state. And so if that's a benefit that a small business can access because there is a state plan, then, you know, and they want to use that and pay for it to whatever degree they feel they can. So Washington State passed it, and I was really surprised to see that it's 2/3 employee-borne and only 1/3 employer-borne. Now, the startup costs are the tricky piece, because there's a certain amount of hiring that has to happen, you know, before the rollout. There's obviously a lot of IT in terms of putting the systems in place. There's the outreach to businesses and employees and you know, agencies and citizens. And so all of that has to happen before you've ever collected your first premium. So what Washington did was they actually received a loan, which they're paying back with interest from their general fund. So, you know, I'm interested in kicking around the idea, mostly because I recognize that, you know, what are we going to do here to help employers in the state of Maine bring people into our state and reverse this demographic winter that we find ourselves in? So, you know, I'm constantly thinking about that.
So this would be set up kind of like an unemployment fund. You know, I've heard
many different discussions
of how that is. Yep. And I know this is a bigger discussion at the federal level. We're hearing about that as well.
Yeah.
So is that kind of what you're implying may be a way to do this?
Maybe. So what we voted on, what Representative Herbig, who presented the bill, amended it to be is an actuarial study, a request for an actuarial study, because the first thing is, we have no idea what this costs. Mm-hmm. And so you really have to know, you know, what are we talking about here? And New Hampshire actually just had an actuarial study completed. And if you Google, you can probably find that report. I haven't gotten all the way through it yet. But they went through at least three different scenarios, you know, mandated, employer size, and that kind of thing. I wouldn't really expect Maine to be that different from New Hampshire. I mean, we have the same population. We haven't, but, you know, I think what's important is for people to not think of paid family and medical leave as just maternity and paternity leave. That's sort of people's first go-to. And so some people's, you know, criticism is, oh, it's people are only going to pay into it until they know they're done having children, and then they'll drop it. And I'm not convinced that that's the case, and I don't believe that that is what has happened in other states where, you know, it's an optional thing. I know people my age that have,
29.
Children with, you know, they have kids that are young adults that, you know, have struggled with mental illness, addiction issues, and, you know, they've had to take time off from work to deal with that. And then, of course, almost all of us who still have our parents alive are thinking about the day when, you know, we may need to take time off to care for our parents, or it could be a spouse, or it could be ourselves. You know, and not that many people in Maine can afford to be out of work without any pay for very long. So,
well, it's a big issue, and
it is.
Certainly you talk about the opioid issue.
Absolutely.
Which is just a
major issue,
major crisis nationally. Yep. And here in Maine.
Yep.
it's no different.
Yeah.
This is a big piece of the puzzle, and you're right, with the average income in Maine being around 39,000, mm-hmm. you know, 40 on a good day. It really is something that is a serious concern from a cost perspective. You know, there is part of this that you also could talk about is paid sick. Now, paid sick is, I mean, Portland has its own little, you know, carve out for that.
Yeah.
You know, how do you see that being part of it as well?
So this paid family medical leave would include being able to take paid time if you yourself are sick. You know, so again, if we can make it easier for employers to offer this as a benefit to their employees so they can recruit and retain good employees, then I'm interested in learning more. I don't know at the end of the day that I'll support it. It may be too expensive for Maine. And, you know, I mean, obviously, the more people that participate, the less expensive everybody's premiums are. And
yeah, would it have to be mandated, do you think? Like the unemployment is, right? Like unemployment is, yeah.
Yeah, because you really do have to get a mass of people buying in. So, I mean, you know, I'd be very interested in hearing from some of our larger employers on this issue. I've reached out to a couple of them mm-hmm. without a lot of success. I'd like to see them get involved. TD offers it. WEX, I believe, offers paid family medical leave. And, you know, they've done it for exactly the reason that I'm saying. But there's a lot of smaller businesses that, you know, if it could be an affordable benefit, or even a private, I mean, like dental insurance. Do you know what I mean? It's something that employers often don't pay even any portion of, but it's offered to their employees. So
sure, I mean, you get all different type of models, right? You get the workers' comp model. You have the unemployment model.
Temporary disability.
Temporary disability issue. Yeah. I mean, you got a lot of different potential issues and costs and factors and all that. But it is, I think it is certainly, if nothing else, something that is being talked about and is mm-hmm. coming. I mean, it's kind of like to put your head in the sand and think it's not going to happen isn't going to be where the world is today.
Well, my concern is it could happen by referendum. And then, like all these other referendum questions, we don't have the control over it that we should. So that is one of my concerns. But it's an interesting subject. I've learned quite a bit about it, and I look forward to learning more about, you know, how it would work specifically in Maine, and, you know, whether it's something we can get ahead of, so that our employers do have it. It's an advantage as opposed to, you know, being a mandate from the federal government. I do want to make sure employers know that if they do offer it under the tax reform package, they now have a tax credit that they can claim with the federal government. And I am exploring with the administration on whether that's something that we can do here in the state, so that, you know, it's one way to encourage it. It's for our Maine employers without establishing a big program.
It's funny. Last week we had Peter Beach on talking about tax
code,
and he brought that up
and
as part of what it is. And he's with Sheehan Finney in Hampshire. Big law firm, covers the Northeast. So, you know, that's a point. I just want to segue into a little bit the opioid issue,
sure,
if I could, because I think it's an underlying cause of a lot of the angst right now having to do with this leave issue. Do you see the legislature doing anything with that? Do you see anything coming in terms of help, in terms of support, anything having to do with the opioid issue this year?
Well, a couple of things. So moving away from the Labor, Commerce, Research, and Economic Development Committee that I chair, which is where paid family medical leave and some of the other issues we're going to talk about today reside for the moment, I have a bill, LD 1771, an act to stabilize vulnerable families. And that is a bill I'm working with the Department of Health and Human Services on, to essentially replicate the model of a very successful treatment program in Portland called Macaulay Residence, which was established by Mercy Hospital 30 years ago. At that time, it was focused on alcoholism. About 7 or 8 years ago, they turned the focus, you know, more toward opiates. And it's for women exclusively. Most of the women have children. Almost all of the women who do have children have open child protective cases. And when they enter the program, most of them are chronic relapsers. Many of them have been homeless. Some have been trafficked. It's a really needy population. But this program has a high level of accountability. And the women hold each other accountable. They hold themselves accountable. And the program holds people accountable. They even have random drug testing with, you know, cause or suspicion, breathalyzing. It's an expensive program, mostly because it provides housing. The women live in their own apartments, all in the same building, mixed in with people from the general public, actually, in the same building. But it's very community-based treatment, which we're finding to be very, very important in terms of recovery. You know, if you take someone and you just send them away in, you know, to some place for several months at a time where they're really not living a life of any, with any normalcy, we find that their chances of, you know, returning to wherever they started and then, you know, continuing their recovery is very slim.
Sure, it's an artificial environment.
Right,
it's not real life, right?
Exactly. So this program, the average stay is about 18 months, so it's a long period of time, but 95% reunify with their children. 100% of their DHHS child protective cases are closed by the time they leave, and 80% have long-term success in recovery. So, you know, it's an excellent program. Yes, it's expensive, but we're spending a lot of money on a lot of other programs that just are not clinically effective.
Well, it's short-term money when you really think
exactly
about the long-term expense, if you want to say.
Right.
And I hate to talk about it in those type of terms, but the reality is it's a expense to human life. It's a expense to government. It's a expense to the private sector. It's a expense all across the board.
And the thing about this program is that when children are involved, those children are just, they're being damaged in many ways irreparably if the chaos continues in their life. But because this program focuses on the mother and the child, there's, you know, services for both of them, therapy for both of them, you're really ending that cycle, and you're not going to see that child back in the same situation, repeating the situation that his parents were in, you know, 20 years down the line. So that's what I love about it, because right now we have this generation of children that's essentially being lost because their parents are addicts, and we're not providing adequate supports for those parents to recover. And what greater motivation to recover from addiction than to get your child back and to, you know, have your child and be well. But some people, they just don't know where to start.
No, and that's the real challenge. We're talking with Amy Volk, Assistant Majority Leader for the Maine State Senate, and we'll be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Hi, this is Carfax. You already say, show me the Carfax. But now you can say, show me millions of used cars for sale at the all-new Carfax.com, where now you can search with the power of Carfax. Want cars with no accidents reported? You got them. Used cars that are well-maintained? You can find those, too. Even one-owner cars are just a click away. Plus, we're the only site where you get a free Carfax report with every car for sale. So, find the cars you want. Avoid the ones you don't. Start your used car search at Carfax.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB 100.5 FM. Presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. I'm your host, David Chulo. Today we're talking with Amy Volk, Assistant Majority Leader for the Maine State Senate. And Amy is here talking about some of the legislative updates that are happening up in Augusta.
Yeah.
Right? Big Augusta. At the dome, as they say up there. It sounds like a big stadium, the dome, right? You know?
It is a beautiful state house.
It is a beautiful state house. Yep. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're talking about some of the bills that are happening right now. We just got done talking about, obviously, addiction and the opioid crisis. And I guess that fits right into the next topic, which is impairment, having to do with not only opioids, but legal marijuana that is now here in Maine to stay.
Yep.
You know, drug testing, all this is part of a discussion
Absolutely.
That I know the Department of Labor has been talking about for a couple of years now.
Yes.
God knows I've been on the air talking about it for more than I care to admit on the air here. Where is it going? Where do we see what's happening? Maine has some ridiculous drug testing laws. I'm going to be up front and say they're just ridiculous.
Your words, not mine.
Yeah, no, I'm going to say it. I think they're ridiculous how you cannot test for almost anything. I know that employers come here, they open businesses, and then they say, I want a drug test. And we tell them, and they go, are you blanking kidding me? You can fill in the blank with any word you'd like. and they go, what's the point? And so talk to us about what's going on right now in the impairment field.
Yeah. so I have sponsored a bill to deal with this. This has been pretty much a perennial bill under the LePage administration. This time around, it's LD 1768, and it has a very long title, so I'm not going to go through the title. But so basically, what most states are doing is moving away from the idea of drug testing per se, and trying to be more sensitive about the fact that, you know, some people have addiction issues, substance use disorder. And some people can be impaired on the job and not be under the influence of drugs. So what the department has focused on over the last couple of years, including convening a wonderful working group that many employers and other organizations participated in, and others were invited to and chose not to actively participate in. And they developed at that time what I thought was some really good legislation around impairment detection. And so basically, you know, what's the protocol for when someone appears to be impaired on the job? You know, how does a supervisor spot that? What is the conversation like when they address it with that employee? You know, at what point do you remove an employee from a safety sensitive position? And at what point do you send them for drug testing? And so, you know, as you know, just like you're saying, the vast majority of employers in the state of Maine may perform pre-employment drug testing, but do not perform post-employment drug testing, including nearly all of our hospitals. This is a major safety concern. Every single time I've served on this committee now for 7.5 years, every single time that this legislation has come before our committee, the Maine Hospital Association has come in and testified in favor. They really, really understand that this is an issue for them. They have employees that have access to controlled substances. They want their patients to be as safe as possible. And so this is a major health concern. This is a major employer concern. And, you know, you have to understand that if someone is impaired on the job and causes harm to themselves or somebody else, it's the employer that's on the hook for that through the workers' compensation system. So this is why employers should have a right to ensure, and obviously a duty to ensure, safety on the job. So in light of the fact that the Marijuana Legalization Implementation Committee chose not to deal with this issue and booted it back to my committee, Labor, Commerce, Research, and Economic Development, in light of the fact that we are at such a crisis with the opiate issue in the state of Maine and in the Northeast, I'm really hoping to get bipartisan support this time around on this legislation. I want to tell you what I've done. So I sponsored this bill on behalf of the Department of Labor because it's a second session bill, so it was submitted by the governor's office. At the hearing, Amy Sneerson from the Maine Human Rights Commission came to the hearing with suggested language changes and, you know, testified in opposition of the bill. She might have been neither for nor against, but it was clearly, you know, opposition, had some issues with the bill. She and I were leaving the committee room at the same time when the hearing was over. And I said, hey, do you have time to come into my office? Let's sit down and go over your language changes. I had no problem with any of her language changes. Fine. She's now on board. Or at least that's my understanding. I don't want to put words in her mouth. You know, another gentleman who's a fairly well-known labor lawyer also testified in opposition to the bill. I called him up. Let's sit down. Tell me what you don't like about this bill. Give me some suggestions for how we can improve it in your world. Went over 2.5-hour meeting with him and my co-chair, by the way, Democrat Ryan Fecto from Biddeford. Very nice meeting, you know, took lots and lots of notes. Then I had a conference call with a major player in the HR world, a lobbyist who represents employers, and the two people from the Department of Labor. 2.5-hour conference call. Took tons and tons of notes. I'm hoping to get all these things together and come up with a bill that is a compromise. I mean, honestly, it's time. Employers are so confused about what to do with legal marijuana. And you can't, even if you have a drug testing, you can't test for marijuana because they could have smoked it over the weekend. And if they smoke it over the weekend, it's perfectly permissible for them to do it, just like to have a couple of drinks. But if they smoked it on their way to work or on their break, which happened at Volk Packaging, by the way, and then, you know, when the guys were confronted about it, they said, oh, that's our time. We were on break. They were running machines.
Right? No, this is a real dilemma.
It's a real problem. So that's why coming up with the standards of impairment works. Now, this legislation needs to be much more specific than the way that Maine law typically looks. And I figured out that because, you know, I looked at what the Department of Labor was using for the definition of impairment. And I think to the labor folks, it looks too broad. And when I asked the department about it, they said, well, you know, the goal is that supervisors will attend this free training that we offer, and there they'll learn what the elements of impairment are. And I said, but see, what you don't understand is that labor looks at that and says, well, A, I've never taken that course, so I don't really know. And she said, well, they could come take it. No, that's not the answer. Because you could change that course next year.
Right. That's exactly right.
So they don't know that you're not going to do that. So we need to spell it out. So if anybody listening has a working definition of the elements of impairment, I'd be happy to take a look at it and possibly incorporate it into law. Because no one's given me one yet. So, you know, I'm going to continue to work on this. It's time. It's really time. It's been 30 years since this law there's been teeny tiny tweaks, but it's been 30 years. And employers really, I mean, they have an obligation, they have a duty, a responsibility to make sure that their workplaces are safe. And it's not fair to them to hold them accountable if they really have their hands tied in trying to do that.
No, this has been the biggest dilemma. Look, employers will do whatever they need to do, right? But they got to know the rules.
Right.
Right? And they got to keep the employees safe.
Right.
And nobody's saying do whatever you want to do in your own time. So be it. It's just really about at the workplace.
Right?
Where you got a group of people coming together to try to do one thing, and that's make a product, do a service.
And remember, some people, you know, may have had surgery or they may have back pain or something, and they may have a legal prescription for opiates. And they may not be impaired. We don't want them scooped up into a drug test. And then, you know, they test positive for opiates, and then people think they have a problem when they don't have a problem. You know, we don't want that to happen. We also don't want the person who has a problem to have their life spiral so far out of control that they've lost their job, they've lost their benefits, and they no longer have insurance in order to seek the help that they need. So, I mean, I really think I'm willing to find middle ground on this issue, and I really, really hope that my colleagues on the other side of the aisle are willing to do the same.
But time is of the essence, right?
It really is. I mean, marijuana is legal in the state of Maine right now. So, and, you know, unfortunately, it's largely unregulated, but we need to do something.
One of the other things that was a conversation about marijuana is the fact that the law, as it passes the, if you want to call it the referendum, had issues having to do with children and marijuana. How has that been fixed in the law this year?
So that was fixed in the law last year. And so it's been adjusted, and now I believe it's 21, just the same as alcohol.
The same as alcohol.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good. I'm glad that's been fixed.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
One thing at a time, right, in terms of what it's happening.
Right.
Okay, so impairment being the issue, and you're looking for a good working definition, certainly if we can come up with that. Do you find that there's any other issues having to do with opioids, impairment, drug testing that is coming in front of the legislature this year?
Well, I mean, there's certainly a lot of issues with dealing with the opiate crisis. And I know Representative Karen Vachon has a bill to establish a hub and spoke type model. She was on the opiate task force, and that was one of their identified priority bills. There's, you know, been some other priority bills that came out of that task force that will be laid before the legislature. And, you know, I think we really need to look at what is clinically effective and what's not. And we need to direct our resources toward the things that work. And if things have not been proven to work and they've been given an opportunity, then we need to stop spending money in those areas.
What a concept. We're talking with Amy Volk, Assistant Majority Leader for the Maine State Senate. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Running
a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and talking with the one, the only. How's that? You like that, Amy? I got your little title here today. The one, the only. Amy Volk, Assistant Majority Leader for the Maine State Senate. And, you know, actually, the wife of the Derek Volk Show. Amy, what do you think of your husband being a radio star?
You know, he really enjoys it. He really likes, he's one of these lifelong learner type people that, you know, he's started out thinking it was going to have a business focus, and it ends up being an anything that interests Derek focus. So it's kind of a window onto his mind, I think.
That must be educational but, for you, right?
Yeah, well, I'm not great about listening, but
I won't tell him that. We won't put that on the air.
Yeah.
I know, that's fun. You also, obviously, have Volk Packaging. And
yes.
So, you know, you're not just a legislature. You're somebody who actually understands business. Talk a little bit for a minute about that, just to give the audience an understanding of who you are and your company's business.
Sure. So Volk Packaging is in its 50th year. It's a third generation family business that was started by Derek's grandfather and father, joined, I think, about 10 years in by his uncle Douglas. And at this point, Derek and his uncle run the business together. And they are the CEO and president. And, you know, it's just, it's, they supply manufacturers in northern New England. And remarkably, however, it's a company that's been growing. They added a second shift a couple of years ago, and that keeps growing. They have just under 100 employees, I believe, at this time. And so I think what makes it unique is that as a supplier of manufacturers in northern New England, they really know what's going on in the world of manufacturing in Maine. And, you know, they don't have a lot of really big, you know, they don't have Poland Spring, you know, or a lot of the, or L.L. Bean. I don't think L.L. Bean actually even uses a ton of boxes anymore, but they don't have those big businesses. Their niche is more the smaller and the medium-sized businesses. They're more likely to be locally owned. And, you know, Derek could come in and talk to you about all of the companies over the course of their history that are no longer here in Maine, where they went, you know, who bought them, and then the locally owned companies that are no longer locally owned. And so as soon as a company is no longer locally owned, it's subject to decision making that's not made in the state of Maine.
That's right.
And, you know, I think that's where I get super frustrated as a legislator, because it's so, I'm so tired of hearing Maine has a great way of life and this is a great place to live. And you know what? The guys and gals in the boardrooms in New York City don't care. You know, they don't care. The stockholders don't care. And those are the people that are making a lot of the decisions for some of the companies in Maine. And I mean, he's traveled to New York City to meet with buyers before. He's talked to buyers that are in other countries and, you know, about buying boxes in Maine for, you know, a manufacturing facility located somewhere in northern New England. They only have about a 200-mile delivery radius, so it's very localized.
And, no, it's great. Well, it's, you know, yeah, it's a family-owned business, and it's great. It's growing, and yes, I mean, you can't complain about that at
all.
In terms of making that happen.
Well, and part of what makes it happen is the positive environment.
That's right.
So last month we had the corrugated Olympics.
Perfect.
They do that when the Olympics come around every 4 years, and they do Summer Olympics and they do Winter Olympics, and everything has an element of corrugated, and people earn medals and they take a ton of pride, and you know, people are getting paid while they're playing these games, and there's a ton of camaraderie. There's a ton of competition, and they're very proud of their titles.
No, it's
awesome. Everyone knows who has the most medals.
No, it's awesome. Okay, so let's get back to some of the legislation that's going on. One of them that has been a big factor is the minimum wage.
Yes.
Right? And so minimum wage is automatically going up every year here in the state of Maine, which means that it is automatically triggering salary increases here in the state of Maine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to never end, right? We're just going to forever increase till we're paying $1,000 an hour.
Well, I don't think that we would get to that point, but it is true that it doesn't even end at $12 an hour, which was what the people voted in by referendum at January 1st, 2020. We'll reach $12 an hour. After that, it will index. And so it only indexes up. It cannot be indexed down. And so every year there'll be a new wage, which is, first of all, very confusing, particularly for small businesses. And second of all, never going down, even if we have another recession, you know, such as we had in 2008-2009. So, you know, we had a 7.5-hour hearing on LD 1757, sponsored by Joel Stetkus. It's another governor's bill. The bill came to us with a rollback to minimum wage from $10 an hour to $9.50 an hour. The sponsor didn't even support that. No one wants that to do that to workers who are currently earning $10 an hour.
Right.
So, you know, that was a non-starter for sure. But I want to tell you that we had hours of testimony from small business owners who typically, you know, are very hands-on in their businesses, who came to the state house, waited around. Like I said, it started at 10 a.m. We didn't finish till 5:30. Who waited around to offer their 3 minutes of testimony, very passionate about this issue and the fact that, you know, they feared for their businesses. Some of them knew of businesses that had already closed as a result of the increased labor costs, particularly in rural areas. So, you know, I mean, you and I are sitting here in southern Maine, and this is not such a big deal in southern Maine.
Nope.
But you leave Cumberland County and you leave the coast, and this becomes a really big deal to the small business owner in a community that is shrinking, where, you know, they may be the only place within 50 miles to buy bread, milk, eggs, butter, you know, whatever the staple is that you forgot or spoiled, you know, you forgot to check the expiration date. I don't know. Gasoline. I mean, you know, you mention it. And so, you know, these people are not wealthy. And we're not talking about Walmart. Walmart is already at, I think, $11 an hour now.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about even Hannaford, because Hannaford can socialize those increased costs across the entire country and even internationally. They're an international company. The biggest business we heard from was Martin's, locally owned corporation, privately held, extraordinarily labor intensive. If you think about it, all of the Martin's stuff comes into them. It has to be sorted. It has to be priced. If you ever shop at Martin's, as I do, you know, they don't scan in the code. Everything is on, the prices are on a tag, and that tag has been put there by a human being. And, you know, so when they check things, they're actually keying in the prices one by one.
Right.
They're not just running them over a laser. So anyway, these are small businesses. These are local. These are the people that sponsor the Little League teams. These are the people that, you know, the schools come to when they are looking for a donation or for an ad, you know, in their school play program. And they're crying to us for help. And I was, you know, extraordinarily disappointed that last week when we voted on this, we proposed an extremely reasonable amendment, which does not touch the $12 an hour, except to push it out by 3 years. So we under our legislation, it would be frozen at 10 for another year, and then it would go up in 50-cent increments instead of $1 increments. We didn't touch indexing. What we did do is we created an 80% training wage for unemancipated minors. It's not something that you have to do as an employer. Mm-hmm. It's not something parents have to let their children take as wages. But if someone is under the age of 18 and a dependent, then their employer could choose to offer them 80%, which would be $8 an hour right now, of the minimum wage for 200 hours only. So that's the first 200 hours of work. Because we know a lot of teens don't have skills. And to pay them $12 an hour is just ridiculous. Because, I mean, already we heard a lot of what the testimony was people are no longer hiring teenagers. Mm-hmm. They're no longer hiring the disabled people. The disabled person that maybe, you know, they were just hiring as a community service, but who really can't work at the same pace as, you know, someone else. And they hate to have to lay off those people. I mean, we heard those stories. We had business owners in tears. We really did. It was very compelling. I thought we had an extraordinarily reasonable amendment. I actually thought that even in my hyperpartisan committee, we would get a bipartisan vote of some sort. I was extremely disappointed.
Is the concern because it was a referendum and it's not the quote-unquote will of the voters?
You know, we really weren't changing the will of the voters. We were just pushing it out a little bit with the wisdom of the legislature in terms of voters, unfortunately, they don't listen to 7.5 hours of testimony when they make up their mind.
They read and what they hear
on
the news.
Yeah, they don't see the state-by-state comparisons that show that the majority of states that have high minimum wages have training wages. A lot of them have special wages for work-study students, and that was an issue that we talked about because that's becoming an issue for some of our university campuses. And if not SMCC, but some of the other community college campuses. Because the amount of money that they receive from the federal government is a finite amount. The federal government doesn't say, oh, you increased your minimum wage. We're going to give you more money to give to work-study students. It doesn't work that way. So guess what? The work-study students are getting fewer hours, or there's fewer students that are getting work-study period on a lot of our campuses. USM, not such a problem because there's so many students that already have jobs. SMCC, not a problem for the same reason. Orono, little bit of a problem. UMaine Fort Kent, problem.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's a little bit of the two mains, but it's also not just the two mains. We're only at $10 an hour right now, folks. When we get to $11 and $12 an hour, no other state or even municipality has increased their minimum wage with the rapidity that this referendum mandated that we increase our wages. No other state. And Maine Center for Economic Progress actually admitted that to me last year when we had the tip credit hearing. It was about 2:00 in the morning, and I got them to admit on mic that it was unprecedented.
Yes, it is.
Yep.
Yet it is a factor of what employers have to deal with today. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plotto and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then, hey! The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, a Newstalk WLOB 100.5 FM, and presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, we've been talking with Amy Volk, Assistant Majority Leader for the Maine State Senate, and just all around wonderful person.
Oh, how's thank
that?
You.
You like that? That's pretty good.
Fighting the good fight.
Fighting the good fight. It's just fighting the good fight. Hey, you know, there are two last little items I want to talk about, and then, of course, we'll wrap up here as we're in the last segment. First is the FLSA, which is the Fair Labor Standards Act, and the change that's happening in terms of overall increases to salary in mm-hmm. general.
Right.
What's going on there?
So this is another result of, you know, unanticipated consequences of the minimum wage increase in Maine. And so what we're looking at is that right now it's a I think it's $23,000 a year is considered federal, that's where they set it at.
Yeah, for salary.
And, yeah.
For non-exempt, I should say, non-exempt, yeah.
So Maine has it pinged off of our minimum wage. So it's 3,000 times our minimum wage.
Right.
And so what we're trying to do is to change that, because we're going to reach a point where it's, you know, this really, really high threshold for the overtime. And so, you know, I have legislation that I sponsored on behalf of the Department of Labor, LD 1769. We're trying to find a solution. I don't think it's probably going to be exactly what the department proposed. But again, I'm someone that always wants to move the ball forward and find a compromise rather than, you know, have to fight the battle all over again next year. So, you know, this is really more prevention, because we're not at that $12 wage yet, but we need to do something before we get there.
Sure. The other one that I know is coming up is ban the box.
Yes. Yes.
Talk to a little bit about that.
Yeah. So that got a favorable vote in committee. The ban the box, which is LD 1566. It is only for public sector applications. And, you know, even some private corporations are no longer asking the question of, have you been convicted of a felony level crime or any crime right on the application. And so basically what it is asking public sector employers to, unless they have to, you know, do a deep dive like fingerprint check, like teachers and childcare centers and places like that, to allow that question to be asked at the interview level rather than on the application. Because sometimes somebody may have a conviction. The conviction could be decades old and they have led a perfect life, you know. Well, no one's perfect, but, you know, they're no more likely to commit a crime tomorrow than you or I. And yet, you know, there's this glass ceiling that prevents them from being able to obtain employment. And so we just want to help them get to the point where they can have that conversation. They can explain, well, yes, I was convicted of a crime, but this is what it was. And it was, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you know, what have you.
Right.
So that's the goal.
Sure. Now, look, a lot of HR professionals and business leader and people, as you say, you don't hear a lot from them up at the legislature, right? I mean, that's what I'm hearing, is that you hear some, but you don't hear as much as you would
I
like.
I would say not enough.
Not enough.
Absolutely.
So how can people go about, you know, how can they get active? How can they speak up where they don't have a lot of time?
Right. Particularly on these issues and employer issues, I always say it's very easy to go on mainlegislature.org and search by location for not just your personal state senator and state rep, but also if you're a business owner, or if you're even if you're head of HR at a business, for, you know, that location as well, for where the business is located. And contact those people when you know that these votes are coming to the floor. You know, I'm happy. You can also contact our clerk for Labor, Commerce, Research, and Economic Development for that committee. You can contact her and say you want to be put on the interested persons list, and you'll get email notifications of when bills are coming for hearing, when they're having a work session. The opportunity to weigh in publicly is at a hearing, but people can email us, call us anytime. Once a bill has been voted on in committee, that's when it's time to start focusing on the bodies at large, the House and the Senate. And so, for example, with minimum wage, we're going to be focusing on business owners who live particularly in the rural parts of the state who have Democrats. We're not going to lose a single Republican vote. I'm very confident with that. This is such a reasonable amendment. We're not going to lose a single Republican vote. So if you are represented by Republicans, don't worry about it. But if you're represented by either at your place of business or at your residence by Democrats, I would urge you to reach out to them on this issue.
We've been talking with Amy Volk, Assistant Majority Leader for the Maine State Senate. Amy, thank you for being on the show today.
My pleasure, Dave.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
Hi, this is Beth Smith from VeralDana. Every employer strives to ensure a safe, injury-free work environment, but it's not always possible to avoid accidents and injury on the job. Today, I'm going to present the first of a two-part series to help you build your team to avoid costly work-related accidents. The best way to avoid a costly claim is to adopt the team approach and then train your team to work as effectively as possible in the event of an injury. First, employees must know the policies in place for accident reporting, prompt treatment, and accommodation should there be temporary limitations that impair their ability to perform their regular job duties. Employees should know that the company expects them to play an active role in their own recovery, from strictly abiding by any medical limitations in any accommodated work to regularly informing human resources as the recovery process evolves. Regular training to reinforce both employee knowledge and company expectations will pay off in reduced lost time cases. For more information, please feel free to contact a member of the VeralDana Labor and Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, Peter Beach, partner and director of Tax Practice Group for Sheehan Finney, discusses tax changes affecting human resources. Peter and your host, David Chulo, will be talking about the new tax bill and how it has changes to payroll tax withholdings, federal tax credits for paid family and medical leave, elimination of deductions, changes in business deductions, and tax implications to the Affordable Care Act and more. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.